Chapter 21. Beyond the short stretch of blank corridor, another door opened onto a room 4 meters by 8, its ceiling 3 meters above. Leafy vines snaked across the walls, trailing from supports rising from the floor. Pale blue walls suggested vast distances beyond the greenery, making the room feel larger than it was, the last vestige of a fashion for false vistas, more than 500 years out of date. At the far end, a dais, and behind it, images of the 4 emanations hung in the vines. On the dais stood Anaanda Miatnai. 2 of her. The Lord of the Ratch was so curious about us she wanted more than one part of herself here to question us, I guessed. Though likely she had rationalized it to herself some other way. We walked to within 3 meters of the Lord of the Ratch, and Sivadin knelt, and then prostrated herself. I was supposedly not Ratchai, not subject to Anaanda Miatnai, but Anaanda Miatnai knew. She had to know who I really was. She had not summoned us this way without knowing. Still, I didn't kneel or even bow. Neither Miatnai betrayed any surprise or indignation at this.
"Citizen Sivadin Vendai," said the Miatnai on the right. "What exactly do you think you're playing at?"
Sivadin's shoulders twitched. As though face down on the floor, she had momentarily wanted to cross her arms. The Miatnai on the left said,
"Justice of Torren's behavior has been alarming and perplexing enough, just on its own. Entering the temple and defiling the offerings. Whatever could you have meant by it? What am I to say to the priests?"
The gun still lay against my side, under my jacket, unremarked. I was an ancillary. Ancillaries were notorious for their expressionless faces. I could easily keep from smiling.
"If my lord pleases," said Sivadin, into the pause that followed Anaanda Miatnai's words.
Her voice was slightly breathy, and I thought maybe she was hyperventilating slightly.
"What? I don't."
The Miatnai on the right let out a sardonic, "Ha!"
"Citizen Sivadin is surprised and doesn't understand me," the Miatnai continued. "And you, Justice of Torren, you intended to deceive me. Why?"
"When I first suspected who you were," said the Miatnai on the left before I could answer,
"I almost didn't believe it. Another long-lost omen fetching up at my feet. I watched you, to see what you would do, to try to understand what you were intending by your rather extraordinary behavior."
If I had been human, I would have laughed. 2 Miatnai's before me. Neither trusted the other to hold this interview unsupervised, unobstructed. Neither knew the details of the destruction of Justice of Torren. Each no doubt suspected the other's involvement. I might be an instrument of either, neither trusting the other. Which was which? The Miatnai on the right said,
"You've done a fairly decent job concealing your origin. It was Inspector Adjunct Sate who first made me suspect."
"I haven't heard that song since I was a child," she'd said. That song that had obviously come from Shisona.
"I admit it took me an entire day to piece everything together, and even then I could hardly believe it. You hid your implants reasonably well. Station was completely deceived. But the humming would likely have given you away eventually, I imagine. You were aware you do it almost constantly. I suspect you're making an effort not to do it now, which I do appreciate."
Still face down on the floor, Sivadin said in a small voice,
"Breck?" "Not Breck,"
said the Miatnai on the left.
"Justice of Torren."
"Justice of Torren, 1-esque," I corrected, dropping all pretense of a Garantate accent or human expression. I was done pretending. It was terrifying because I knew I couldn't live long past this, but also, oddly, a relief, a weight gone. The right-hand Mir-Na'ai gestured the obviousness of my statement. "Justice of Torren is destroyed," I said. Both Mir-Na'ai seemed to stop breathing. Stared at me. Again, I might have laughed if I were capable of it.
"Begging my lord's indulgence," said Sivadin from the floor, voice tentative. "Surely there's some mistake. Breck is human. She can't possibly be Justice of Torren I-esque. I served in Justice of Torren's esque decade. No Justice of Torren medic would give 1-esque a body with a voice like Breck's. Not unless she wanted to seriously annoy the esque lieutenants."
Silence. Thick and heavy for 3 seconds. "She thinks I'm special missions," I said, breaking that silence. "I never told her I was. I never told her I was anything except Breck from the Gerontate, and she never believed that. I wanted to leave her where I found her, but I couldn't, and I don't know why. She was never one of my favorites." I knew that sounded insane. A particular sort of insane, an AI insanity. I didn't care. "She doesn't have anything to do with this." The right-hand Mir-Na'ai lifted an eyebrow.
"Then why is she here?"
"No one could ignore her arrival here. Since I arrived with her, no one could ignore or conceal mine. And you already know why I couldn't just come straight to you." The slight twitch of a frown on the right-hand Mir-Na'ai.
"Citizen Sivadin Vendai,"
said the Mir-Na'ai on the left.
"It is now clear to me that Justice of Torren deceived you. You didn't know what it was. It would be best, I think, if you left now, without, of course, speaking of this to anyone else."
"No,"
breathed Sivadin into the floor, as though she were asking a question, or as though she was surprised to hear the word come out of her mouth.
"No,"
she said again, more certainly.
"There's a mistake somewhere. Breck jumped off a bridge for me."
My hip hurt thinking of it. No sane human being would have done that.
"I never said you were sane,"
Sivadin said quietly, sounding slightly choked.
"Sivadin Vendai," said the left-hand Mir-Na'ai. "This ancillary, and it is an ancillary, isn't human. The fact you thought it was explains a good deal of your behavior that was unclear to me before. I'm sorry for its deception and your disappointment, but you need to leave now."
"Begging my lord's indulgence," Sivadin still lay face down, speaking into the floor.
"Whether you give it or not, I'm not leaving Breck."
"Go away, Sivadin," I said, expressionless.
"Sorry,"
she said, sounding almost blithe except her voice still shook slightly.
"You're stuck with me."
I looked down at her. She turned her head to look up at me, her expression a mixture of fear and determination. "You don't know what you're doing," I told her. "You don't understand what's happening here."
"I don't need to."
"Fair enough,"
said the Mir-Na'ai on the right, seeming almost amused. The left-hand one seemed less so. I wondered why that was.
"Explain yourself, Justice of Torren."
Here it was. The moment I had worked toward for 20 years. Waited for, feared would never come. "First," I said, "as I'm sure you already suspect, you were aboard Justice of Torren, and it was you yourself who destroyed it. You breached the heat shield because you discovered you had already suborned me yourself some time previously. You're fighting yourself. At least 2 of you, maybe more." Both Mir-Na'ais blinked, and shifted their stances a fraction of a millimeter in a way I recognized. I'd seen myself do it, in Oz, when communications cut out. Another of those communication-blocking boxes. Part of Anna and Mir-Na'ai, at least, must have worried about what I might say, must have been waiting with her hand on the switch. I wondered how far the effect reached, and which Mia Na'ai had triggered it, trying too late to hide my revelation from herself. Wondered what that must have been like, knowing that facing me this way could only lead to disaster, and yet obligated by the nature of her struggle with herself to do so. The thought amused me briefly. Second, I reached into my jacket, pulled out the gun, the dark grey of my glove bleeding into the white the weapon had taken from my shirt. I'm going to kill you. I aimed at the right-hand Mia Na'ai, who began to sing, in a slightly flat baritone, in a language dead for 10,000 years.
The person with weapons.
I couldn't move, couldn't squeeze the trigger.
You should be afraid of the person with weapons. You should be afraid. All around the cry goes out, put on armor made of iron. The person with weapons. You should be afraid of the person with weapons. You should be afraid.
She shouldn't know that song. Why would Anna Andamiatna I ever go digging in forgotten Valskayan archives? Why would she trouble to learn a song that very possibly no one but me had sung for longer than she had been alive?
Justice of Torren, one esk, said the right-hand Mia Na'ai. Shoot the instance of me to the left of the instance that's speaking to you.
Muscles moved without my willing them. I shifted my aim to the left and fired. The left-hand Mia Na'ai collapsed to the ground. The right-hand one said,
Now I just have to get to the docks before I do, and yes, Sivadin, I know you're confused, but you were warned.
Where did you learn that song? I asked, still otherwise frozen.
From you, said Anna Andamiatna I, 100 years ago at Valskai.
This, then, was that Anna Anda who had pushed reforms, begun dismantling Ratcha'ai ships, the one who had first visited me secretly at Valskai, and laid down those orders I could sense but never see.
I asked you to teach me the song least likely to ever be sung by anyone else, and then I set it as an access and hid it from you. My enemy and I are far too evenly matched. The only advantage I have is what might occur to me when I'm apart from myself. And that day it occurred to me that I had never paid close enough attention to you, you, one esk, to what you might be.
Something like you, I guessed, apart from myself. My arm still outstretched, gun aimed at the back wall.
Insurance,
Mia Na'ai corrected.
An access I wouldn't think of looking for to erase or invalidate. So very clever of me. And now it's blown up in my face. All of this, it seems, is happening because I paid attention to you in particular, and because I never paid any attention to you. I'm going to return control of your body to you, because it'll be more efficient. But you'll find you can't shoot me.
I lowered the gun. Which me?
What's blown up?
Asked Sivadin, still on the floor. My lord, she added. She split, I explained. It started at Garset. She was appalled by what she'd done, but she couldn't decide how to react. She's been secretly moving against herself ever since. The reforms, getting rid of ancillaries, stopping the annexations, opening up assignments to lower houses. She did all of that. And Ime was the other part of her, building up a base and resources to go to war against herself and put things back the way they had been. And the whole time, all of her has been pretending not to know what is happening, because as soon as she admitted it, the conflict would be in the open and unavoidable.
But you said it straight out to all of me,
Mia Na'ai acknowledged,
because I couldn't exactly pretend the rest of me wasn't interested in Sivadin Vendai's second return, or what had happened to you. You showed up so publicly, so obviously. I couldn't hide it and pretend it hadn't happened and only talk to you myself. And now, I can't ignore it any more. Why Why would you do such a thing? It wasn't any order I ever gave you.
No, I agreed. It wasn't.
And surely you guessed what would happen if you did such a thing?
Yes. I could be my ancillary self again, unsmiling, no satisfaction in my voice. Anna Ander considered me a moment, and then made a "hm" sound, as though she'd reached some conclusion that surprised her.
"Get up off the floor, citizen,"
she said to Cyverdon. Cyverdon rose, brushing her trouser legs with one gloved hand.
"Are you all right, Breck?"
"Breck?"
interrupted me a Na'ai before I could answer, stepping off the dais and striding past.
"Is the last remaining fragment of a grief-crazed AI, which has just managed to trigger a civil war?"
She turned to me.
"Is that what you wanted?"
"I haven't been crazed with grief for at least 10 years, I protested, and the civil war was going to happen anyway, sooner or later.
"I was rather hoping to avoid the worst of it. If we're extremely fortunate, that war will only cause decades of chaos and not tear the Ratch apart completely. Come with me."
"Ships can't do that anymore," insisted Cyverdon, walking beside me.
"You made them that way, my lord, so they didn't lose their minds when their captains died, like they used to, or follow their captains against you."
Mia Na'ai lifted an eyebrow.
"Not exactly."
She found a panel on the wall by the door that had been previously invisible to me, yanked it open and triggered the manual door switch.
"They still get attached. Still have favorites."
The door slid open.
"One Esk, shoot the guard."
My arm swung up and I fired. The guard staggered back against the wall, reached for her own weapon but slid to the floor and then lay still. Dead, because her armor retracted.
"I couldn't take that away without making them useless to me,"
Anna Andamietna I continued, oblivious to the person, the citizen, she just ordered killed. Still explaining to Cyverdon, who frowned, not understanding.
"They have to be smart. They have to be able to think."
"Right," agreed Cyverdon. Her voice trembled just slightly, the edge of her self-control wearing thin, I thought.
"And they're armed ships, with engines capable of vaporizing planets. What am I going to do if they don't want to obey me? Threaten them? With what?"
A few strides had brought us to the door communicating with the temple, and Anna opened that and stepped briskly into the chapel of legitimate political authority. Cyverdon made an odd sound in the back of her throat, an aborted laugh or a noise of distress, I wasn't sure which.
"I thought they were just made so they had to do as they were told."
"Well, exactly,"
said Anna Andamiatna I, as we followed her through the temple's main hall. Sounds from the concourse reached us, someone speaking urgently, voice pitched high and loud. The temple itself seemed deserted.
"That's how they were made from the start, but their minds are complex and it's a tricky proposition. The original designers did that by giving them an overwhelming reason to want to obey, which had advantages, and rather spectacular disadvantages. I couldn't completely change what they were, I just adjusted it to suit me. I made obeying me an overriding priority for them, that I confused the issue when I gave Justice of Torren 2 me's to obey, with conflicting aims. And then I suspect I unknowingly ordered the execution of a favorite. Didn't I?"
She looked at me.
"Not Justice of Torren's favorite. I wouldn't have been so foolish, but I never paid attention to you. I'd never have asked if someone was One Esk's favorite."
"You thought no one would care about some nobody cook's daughter." I wanted to raise the gun. Wanted to smash all that beautiful glass in the mortuary chapel as we passed it. Anna Andamiatna I stopped, turned to look at me.
"That wasn't me. Help me now. I'm fighting that other me even now, I'm quite certain. I wasn't ready to move openly, but now you've forced my hand. Help me, and I'll destroy her and remove her utterly from myself.
You can't, I said. I know what you are better than anyone. She's you and you're her. You can't remove her from yourself without destroying yourself, because she's you.
Once I reached the docks, Anna Andamiatna, I said, as though it were an answer to what I had just said, I can find a ship. Any civilian ship will take me where I want to go without question. Any military ship will be a dicier proposition. But I can tell you one thing, Justice of Torren I-esque, one thing I'm certain of. I've got more ships than she does.
Meaning what exactly? Asked Cyverdon. Meaning, I guessed, the other Miatna Eye is likely to lose an open battle, so she has a slightly better reason to want to stop this spreading any further. I could see Cyverdon didn't understand what that meant. She's held it back by concealing it from herself, but now all of her here,
most of me, anyway,
corrected Anna Andamiatna Eye. Now she's heard it straight out. She can't ignore it. Not here. But she might be able to prevent the knowledge from reaching the parts of her that aren't here, at least long enough to strengthen her position. Realization made Cyverdon's eyes widen.
She'll need to destroy the gates as soon as possible. But it can't work. The signal travels at the speed of light. Surely she can't possibly overtake it. The information hasn't left the station yet, said Anna Andamiatna Eye. There's always a slight delay. It would be far more efficient to destroy the palace instead.
Which would mean turning a warship engine on the entire station, vaporizing it along with everyone on it.
And I'd have to destroy the whole palace to stop the information going any further. There isn't just one spot where my memories are stored. It's made hard to destroy or tamper with on purpose.
Do you think, I asked, into Cyverdon's shocked silence, that even you could get a sword or a mercy to do that, even with accesses?
How badly would you like the answer to that question?
Asked Anna Andamiatna Eye.
You know I'm capable of it.
I do, I acknowledged. Which option do you prefer?
None of the currently available choices is very good. The loss of either the palace or the gates or both will cause disruption on an unprecedented scale all through Ratch space. Disruption that will last for years simply because of the size of that space, not destroying the palace. And the gates, really. They're still part of the problem. Will ultimately be even worse.
The Skyat Orware know what's going on? I asked.
Orware has been a thorn in my side for nearly 3,000 years, said Mianai,
calmly, as though this were an ordinary casual conversation.
So much moral indignation. I'd almost think they'd bred for it, but they're not all genetically related. But if I stray from the path of propriety and justice, I'm sure to hear about it from Orware.
Then why not get rid of them? Asked Cyverdon.
Why go and make one, Inspector Supervisor here? Pain is a warning, said Anna Andamiatna Eye. What would happen if you removed all discomfort from your life?
No, Miatna Eye continued, ignoring Cyverdon's obvious distress at her words.
I value that moral indignation. I encourage it.
No, you don't, I said. By now we were on the concourse. Security and military herded sections of the frightened crowd. Many of them would have implants, would have been receiving information from station when it suddenly cut out with no explanation. A ship's captain I didn't know spotted us and hurried over.
My lord, she said, bowing.
Get these people off the concourse, Captain, Anna Andamiatna I said, and clear the corridors as quickly and safely as you can. Continue to cooperate with station security. I'm working to resolve this as quickly as possible.
As Anna Andamiatna I spoke, a flash of movement caught my eye. Gun. Instinctively I raised my armor, saw the person holding the gun was one of the people who had been following us on the concourse just before security had summoned us. The Lord of the Ratch must have sent orders before she triggered her device and cut off all communications, before she knew about the Garsadai gun. The captain Anna Andamiatna I had been speaking to recoiled,
visibly startled by the sudden appearance of my armour. I raised my own gun, and a hammer-hard blow hit me from the side. Someone else had shot at me. I fired, hit the person holding the gun. She fell, her own shot wild, hitting the temple facade behind me, shattering some god, bright-coloured chips flying. Sudden, shocked silence from the already frightened citizens along the concourse. I turned, looked along the trajectory of the bullet that had hit me, saw panicked citizens and the sudden silver gleam of armour. This other shooter had seen me shoot the first, didn't know armour wouldn't help her. Half a metre from her, another flash of silver as someone else armoured herself. Citizens between me and my targets, moving unpredictably. But I was used to crowds of the frightened and the hostile. I fired and fired again. The armour disappeared, both my targets fallen. Cyverdon said,
"Fuck! You are an ancillary!"
"We'd better get off the concourse," said Anna-Anda Miatna-Ai.
And to the nameless captain beside her,
"Captain, get these people to safety."
"But..." the captain began, but we were already moving away, Cyverdon and Anna-Anda Miatna-Ai staying low, moving as speedily as they could. I wondered briefly what was happening in other parts of the station. Omor Palace was huge. There were four other concourses, though all were smaller than this one, and level upon level of homes, workplaces, schools, public spaces, all of it full of citizens who would certainly be frightened and confused. If nothing else, anyone who lived here knew the necessity of following emergency procedures, wouldn't stop to argue or wonder once the order to seek shelter had gone out. But of course, station couldn't give that order. I couldn't know or help. "Who's in the system?" I asked, as soon as we were out of earshot, climbing down an emergency access ladder well, my armour retracted.
"Near enough to matter, you mean?"
Anna-Anda Miatna-Ai answered from above me.
"Three swords and four mercies in easy shuttle distance."
Any order from Anna-Anda Miatna-Ai on the station would have to come by shuttle, because of the communications blackout.
"I'm not worried about them at this very moment. There's no possibility of giving them orders from here."
And the instant there would be, the instant that blackout was raised, the entire question would already be settled. The knowledge Anna-Anda Miatna-Ai was so desperate to hide from herself, already speeding toward the gates that would take it through all of Raj space. "Is anyone docked?" I asked. Right now, those would be the only ships that mattered.
"Only a shuttle from Mercy of Color," said Anna-Anda Miatna-Ai,
sounding half amused.
"It's mine."
"Are you certain?" And when she didn't answer, I said, "Captain Vel isn't yours."
"You got that impression too, did you?"
Anna-Anda Miatna-Ai's voice was definitely amused now. Above me, above Anna-Anda Miatna-Ai, Cyverdon climbed, silent except for her shoes on the ladder rungs. I saw a door, halted, pulled the latch, swung it open, and peered into the corridor beyond. I recognized the area behind the dock offices. Once we'd all clambered into the corridor and shut the emergency door, Anna-Anda Miatna-Ai strode ahead, Cyverdon and me following.
"How do we know she's the one she says she is?"
Cyverdon asked me very quietly. Her voice still shook, and her jaw looked tight. I was surprised she hadn't curled up in a corner somewhere or fled. "It doesn't matter which one she is," I said, not making any attempt to lower my voice. "I don't trust any of her. If she tries to go anywhere near Mercy of Kala's shuttle, you're going to take this gun and shoot her." All of what she'd said to me might easily be a ruse, intended to get me to help her to the docks and to Mercy of Kala, so she could destroy this station herself.
"You don't need the Garsadai gun to shoot me,"
Anna-Anda Miatna-Ai said, without looking behind her.
"I'm not armoured. Well, some of me is, but not me. Not most of me."
She turned her head briefly to look at me.
"That is troublesome, isn't it?"
With my free hand, I gestured my lack of concern or sympathy. We turned a corner and stopped cold, confronted with Inspector Adjunct Sate, holding a stun stick, the sort of thing station security might use. She must have heard us talking in the corridor, because she evinced no surprise at our appearance, just a look of terrified determination.
"Inspector Supervisor says I'm not to let anyone past."
Her eyes were wide, her voice unsure. She looked at Anna-Anda Miatna-Ai.
"Especially not you."
Anna-Anda Miatna-Ai laughed. "Quiet," I said, or Cyverdon will shoot you. Anna and Amiatna'ai raised an eyebrow, plainly disbelieving that Cyverdon could bring herself to do any such thing, but she was silent. Dao Sait, I said, in the language I knew had been her first. Do you remember the day you came to the lieutenant's house and found the tyrant there? You were afraid, and you grabbed my hand. Her eyes impossibly grew wider. You must have woken before anyone else in your house, or they'd never have let you come, not after what happened the night before. But I must speak with Skye at Owere. You're alive, she said, eyes still wide, still not quite believing. Is the lieutenant, Inspector Supervisor will be so? She's dead. I interrupted before she could get any further. I'm dead. I'm all that's left. I have to speak to Skye at Orwell right now. The tyrant will stay here, and if she won't, then you should hit her as hard as you can. I had thought Dao Sait was mainly astonished, but now tears welled, and one dropped onto her sleeve, where she held the stick at the ready. All right, she said. I will. She looked at Anna and Amiatna'ai, and lifted the stick just slightly, the threat plain, though it did strike me as foolhardy to post no one here but Dao Sait. What's the Inspector Supervisor doing? She's sent people to manually lock down all the docks. That would take a lot of people and a long time. It explained why Dao Sait was here by herself. I thought of storm shutters rolling down in the lower city. She said it was just like that night in Oz, and the tyrant had to be doing it. Anna and Amiatna'ai listened to all this, bemused. Cyverdon seemed to have passed into some sort of shocked state beyond astonishment. You stay here, I said to Anna and Amiatna'ai in Ratcha'ai, or Dao Sait will stun you. Yes, I got that much, said Anna and Amiatna'ai. I see I didn't make a very positive impression when we last met, citizen. Everyone knows you killed all those people, Dao Sait said. Two more tears escaped. And blame the lieutenant for it. I had thought she was too young to have such strong feelings about the event. Why are you crying? I'm scared. Not taking her eyes off Anna and Amiatna'ai, or lowering the stick. That struck me as very sensible. Come on, Cyverdon. I walked past Dao Sait. Voices sounded ahead, where the outer office lay, past a turning. One step, and then the next. It had never been anything else. Cyverdon let out a convulsive breath. It might have started as a laugh, or something she'd wanted to say. Well, she said then, we survived the bridge. That was easy. I stopped and checked under my brocaded jacket, counting magazines even though I already knew how many I had, shifted one from under the waistband of my trousers to a jacket pocket. This is not going to be easy, or end half as well. Are you with me? Always, she said, voice still oddly steady, though I was sure she was on the point of collapse. Haven't I already said that? I didn't understand what she meant, but now wasn't the time to wonder or ask. Then let's go.